So the first thing that people probably don't know about you, and notice I'm not going to ask the NERD question first. I'll wait a little while just on principle. Yeah, thank you, Sahib.
Because of Pro Tools,
it's in question number three. Yeah. I waited for question number three.
We'll just enjoy the moment while we can.
Would you do that, please? Be yourselves, okay? No, don't kid. It's true. But I do research just for kicks, even when I don't know nothing. Your first album was out in 1996, so you've been around a while. So why don't you give the revisionist history, because we've got about 8 years to make up between, you know, then and now. So who wants to take that lovely...
I wanted to take that.
You know what? Actually, the first thing you should do is pass around the microphone, because we want to pretend you're the monkeys, and introduce yourselves. You know, hi, I'm and I'm blonde and, you know, looking for a girlfriend or whatever.
You know. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. I'm John.
I did that to him purposely. Go ahead.
I'm John Osby. I'm the vocalist and keyboard player.
My name is Twig, and I play bass for Spy Mob.
This is Eric Fawcett, and I'm Spy Mob's drummer.
Hey, it's Brent Paschke, guitar player, Spy Mob.
And also the one, for those that can't tell on the radio, with the snacks. He's got the snacks.
They might be
the one with the snacks.
He's not sharing the snacks.
No, there was no invitation to.
There was no invitation to share the snacks. Okay. Now back to our regularly scheduled program.
So the question is what we've been doing since 1996.
Right, and tell people about the history. Give them a little bit of just the 1 minute, you know.
Okay. Well, Spy Mob was built on, I guess, a couple friendships. Eric and I went to college together and played a lot of music together. We were actually randomly assigned as roommates our first year of college.
Where was that?
That was St. Olaf College. It's a small liberal arts school outside of Minneapolis.
I'm going to get to Minnesota for
a while. Right. And then so, actually, about a year after we graduated, we were looking to form a new band and hooked up with Brent, our guitarist, and Spy Mob was born. And then we actually had a few other bass players in the past. And then so Brent, Eric, and I formed the band about 10 years ago. And then Twig, our bass player, has been in the band for about 4 years. And he came into the band because of his friendship and also being a former classmate of Brent's at a music school in Minneapolis.
Before Brent was in Spy Mob.
There will be a chart. Is there a chart coming?
Family tree.
Get the whiteboard out and do the whole thing. Cool.
Yeah.
Who wants to take the band's name?
John's going to have to take that one again.
The band's name.
There's no real interesting story. We were having in sort of an argument about what to call the band, and in the midst of it, I just sort of made up the name Spy Mob. It just kind of came to me. So there's no deep meaning to it.
Divine intervention, we like to call it.
Divine intervention.
Yeah.
So
our buddies in Hoobastank tell elaborate stories. I think there are probably 12 or 15 elaborate stories about where Hoobastank came from. So, you know, I think that's another angle we could take on this whole thing is, you know, start concocting
every time
things.
Somebody asks
you
that,
should. I think part of your publishers needs to give you some good stories to tell.
We have the good stories.
Godfather, and you know.
We just don't have the good story about the name. But most of the stuff we'll tell you today are lies.
Thank you. I would be disappointed. Okay, so let's do the let's get this one over with, and then we'll move on to fun questions. The association with the other band, which we will, you know, we all know, but I'll, you know, NERD, did that increase label interest, or was that already in progress?
Well, we had already. We have sort of a typical, or like many artists, have been on a ton of labels and had a bunch of experiences which did not work out positively on labels. So,
that's surprising to hear a story about that.
Right. So, and that started, in 1998 when we first started, you know, getting on record labels and not having anything released. So we had already.
That's why we know nothing. Is what you're saying.
Right. So we had already sort of started. Been down that path a bit when we met those guys, and we met them, the Neptunes, because unbeknownst to us, they were Spy Mob fans. Somebody at our publishing company had thought that they had, who knew them, unbeknownst to us, had given them some of our music, thinking that they would like us, and they did. And then, in sort of a small world, scenario, it turned out that the lawyer, their lawyer at the time, was a guy who was also working with us, and so he introduced us. That led to getting on their label, and then they invited us to play on their first record, or the first NERD record, In Search Of, and then just started playing gigs, a few gigs here and there with them, and that led to touring internationally with them.
So there's the role reversal nobody would have ever suspected, that they were actually fans of yours. As opposed to, man, we showed up at the Neptunes concert and we went up to him and said, man, you gotta help us, man. Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
It's nice
okay.
The way it happened.
This is, you know, everybody has something in their bag of tricks, and this is mine. You know. Allmusic.com. Ever go to allmusic.com?
Yes.
Do you? Yeah. Okay, allmusic.com.
All music.
When people don't know anything about a band, and they're trying to research it or whatever, they go to allmusic.com. And allmusic.com gives you the genre. You are rock, just in case you didn't know you were rock. You know, your style, your indie pop and pop underground. But this is the part that always gets people, and I love doing this. It's like doing bad Seinfeld comedy. You are, here are your tones. You have a tone. In fact, you have many tones. You are carefree, earnest, exuberant, amiable, good-natured, cheerful, happy, joyous, sweet, playful, and freewheeling. Whoa. Would anybody like to comment on your official internet tones?
That's all a bunch of fucking bullshit. We're all really pissed off,
and I'm
leaving.
Which one do you object to?
Give me those again here. Let's see.
Yeah, you're carefree, earnest, exuberant, amiable. Yeah, I can. Good-natured. It's easy on. You know how to do that. Cheerful, happy, joyous, sweet, playful, and freewheeling. What would you like to particularly object to?
Let's see.
Or you can agree with something, although he certainly has blown his cover.
You know, I agree. I thought
he was serious.
I think they're right on.
Go on. Jesus.
I think it's right on. I really do.
There you go.
I think it's, yo, I'm serious.
Technology's amazing.
They're spot on. All right, back to the real questions. I just love doing that because...
That's fun.
No, because there's certain people
I know all music, but I don't know those little, like,
so you gotta pay attention.
Synopses that you can get of yourself.
Tell me about the cover of Sitting Around and Keeping Score for those who haven't even seen it yet, and for that matter, the title of it. Who wants to take that one?
I'll take it. The title, Sitting Around Keeping Score, is a title that came from a song that... John wrote called Sitting Around Keeping Score. So,
which is about?
Sort of like the game that, you know, new lovers play, you know, who called who last, and is it my turn to call, and is it, you know...
I love that game.
And, you know, it's the whole ego thing that we all go through in any new relationship. But the album art came from... We actually did quite an extensive photo shoot with a photographer that we totally dug. We went all around town, and one of the places where we stopped in Minneapolis, and it was important to us that we did it in Minneapolis, where all of, you know, which is where we live, is one of the stops was the studio where we recorded that album and have worked on all kinds of things, and we took a bunch of shots that everyone just loved. We loved them, the label loved them, and the guy who did the art just put it all together in a way that we just thought, wow, this pops. So a lot of the shots came from that studio or a gig that we happened to play the night before.
It's pretty cool.
It's a
neat cover.
It's a mic case. Can I add something?
Yes.
So one thing that we all thought was great trying to figure out the name for the record was taking, even though that song has its own meaning, the fact of what we have had gone through with the record industry, we just felt like it was a perfect idea.
Ball and strikes and zeros. And
yeah, it just a lot of sitting around and waiting. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to add that a little.
So do you think, and Katie, our producer, and I were kind of talking about this, because the last time she saw you, you know, was with the Neptunes, you know, and came out and did a few things. Do you think it's kind of more appropriate, and for the people who haven't heard your music yet, is it more appropriate for you to be opening like bands like The Thrills, and, you know, certainly more in tune with what you play to a certain extent? What's your opinion on that?
As opposed to opening
as
for NERD?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that we're opening for The Thrills, I mean, it's a great change, and we're playing for an audience that is much closer to the center of the of our audience. You know, that being said, our partnership and relationship with NERD has been great as well, and we're reaching people that we would not have reached, and so that's cool. But definitely, it's great to be playing with The Thrills, and, you know, they represent, you know, they have a fan base that is much closer to the heart of the fan base that will be in into Spy Mob. So it's
and
great.
And they're funny guys.
They are funny. They're funny they're nice. Guys. They're delightful guys.
Yeah.
Okay, so rather than asking the typical band influences question, I'll ask you it a different way. What, I get to play anything I want in sets, which is a lucky thing. What would you like me, and you can each kind of take it, and this always either baffles people or they do it immediately. So we're making a Spy Mob sandwich, and you guys are the peanut butter and jelly in the middle. Use metaphors when in doubt. So what do you want the bread to be surrounding you? What do you, who do you want me to play before and after you in your dream Spy Mob musical set? He said, oh, and he's got food in his mouth. I'd like you to play something but potato chips, please.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
Sarah Smile.
Okay. Sarah Smile.
Hollow Notes. Sarah Smile.
Okay, I can get away with that.
Something Anything.
Okay.
Something Anything. Todd Rundgren. What cut? What do you want me to do?
Just like Hello, It's Me. Track? Hello, It's Me is great. Or yeah.
I saw the light.
Yeah. 1972. Yeah. I have a green 45 of that.
Yeah.
Green vinyl.
Cool.
Yep, I know. We were all young then, but I had all that stuff. Boy, I used to, you know, it was like the love song, right? Anything else?
I'd say Beck, Sea Change. In terms of recent albums, that's a big favorite of ours.
Cool. That's going to be an interesting set, huh?
And then how about like something from Abbey Road?
Yeah.
Like the whole second side.
Hey, right? Yeah, please. Just,
I mean, you
just
never
play.
Gave me your money and just
please.
Go on. And I know.
Yeah,
what
that
I,
sounds good.
You know what really kind of sucks is in iTunes. You know, it divides it up into individual songs, so I decided to load that whole section of Abbey Road. And you know what it does?
It cuts everything.
It cuts them. Yeah. It cuts it off, yeah. And you can't listen to the second side of Abbey Road. If you,
wait,
and, I'm waiting for somebody to tell me how to get around that.
Can you set your iTunes so there's no...
I don't know. I've been trying to do that, so it tells me how long between cuts. It kind of does segues for you, mm-hmm. And
well,
it overlaps stuff. Dear Apple, you're from the Bay Area. Can we talk about this, please, Mr. Jobs?
Dear Apple.
You know what? Another...
The Beatles room.
It wouldn't be right if we didn't throw Stevie Wonder into that.
What cut?
Superwoman.
Help me out.
Superwoman?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great cut.
I mean, wow. We could go on forever.
Yeah, we could have a lot of cuts.
No, but I like this. This
let's
is
throw
just...
a, let's throw a Meters instrumental in there.
There's a new. I just got a new Best of the Meters, so which one do you want?
Sissy Strut, man.
Sissy Strut?
No, it's the classic, the standard one, but yeah. It's such a great cut. Yeah.
This is going to be... I'm looking forward to this set.
Yeah?
Are you really going to make it happen?
Yes! Oh, yes.
We have to get a tape of it. Cause
yeah, it'll probably be a couple of months till I get the full interview on the air, because we always play the cut version first, right. But I will make it happen. Awesome. Katie will tell you that I've done it multiple times. If you guys were in the studio, we'd just be doing that right now and doing the segues.
Is a set like 45 minutes? What is a set?
When it's the hour show and I'm playing the full interview, I can do whatever I want and like cut out what I just said. Okay.
Wait, I got to throw out one more song.
Go ahead.
Steely Dan, Gaucho, the track, Gaucho.
I thought you were going to say Rush, Lupita Strangiato.
No, I wasn't.
No.
Gaucho.
What's it like playing to audiences who are more than likely hearing your music for the first time?
You know, it's honestly good to remind ourselves that that's the case. Because, you know, there are a lot of cities where we've played before that, you know, there's a pocket of people who are familiar with us. And when we get used to that, and we play a city where that's not the case, you know, we have to remember that the attentive stares aren't a bad thing, you know, because when we get back there the next time, you know, they do know the music. So, you know, we actually remind ourselves of that because, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Keeps you where you should be.
Right.
And it's important to us it's inevitable that you relate to your audience, and the audience totally affects you.
And you're going, hello, Milwaukee! Good to see you!
And you're in Chicago?
And you're in Chicago.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Right. Yeah, that's a famous one. So, the typical question asked a different way. Would it be an insult to call your music power pop?
I think that power pop, you know, we've never thought of ourselves as power pop, but a lot of people think of ourselves kind of that way. I think of it as sort of like power pop meets, I think there's also like kind of an R&B, old school R&B influence that most power pop bands don't have. So I think of power pop as there, but also sort of a classic rooted in not so much pop, but also, you know, old school R&B, some jazz, things like that. So I think power pop is part of it though.
And also, I think it's kind of important to know what the definition of power pop is, because I feel I feel like at this stage of the game, it feels like power pop seems to be bands like Sum 41 or Good Charlotte and like that, where it's that. And I just
the records.
No, not really. I don't think so. I mean.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
It
just seems like
right. If you're under, you know, 30, power pop might be that. If you're over 30, power pop is the records and Matthew
Big Star
Sweet
and Big Star and Bad Finger
and all of that stuff. So, what is it about, speaking of Minnesota, and having been there last January in the freezing cold?
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's a long story. What is it about Minnesota that breeds, you know, the Replacements and Epic Hero? Is it just so darn cold that you stay inside and play a lot, or what? What is it? What? Because, I mean, it's not a typical place that, you know, in the old days you didn't say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so was from Minnesota, and yet, you know, with Westerberg and all of these, you know, bands.
You know, you have the fact that it's cold, and you have the fact that there are tons of clubs, and, you know, those clubs don't make the bands pay to play. There are a lot of venues for bands to play in. It's affordable. There's a lot of rehearsal spaces that are available. But one thought that I overheard or I read recently, and I think this is true, is it's a really Lutheran Protestant area, and a lot of kids grow up playing and singing in church, and then like their parents have, you know, made them play piano as kids, and, you know, they rejected that at some point and picked up a guitar. But I think music and like music programs in that area were serious, and like Prince, I think, you know, grew up in playing.
That's nothing
in church.
To do with Garrison Keillor, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, sort of like that whole like Lutheran church environment. I think that there is in these families where, you know, Dave Perner grew up in. I'm just hypothesizing, but, you know, there was a sense that music had a place. But, you know, when these kids grew up, they grabbed the guitar and, you know, put the piano down.
Anybody else have a theory on it? The Minnesota sound. Well, the soda sound.
Also, I mean, Minnesota has.
Sound. I like that.
Yeah. The Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Minnesota have always been very supportive of the arts, and I think that, you know, extends to rock and roll.
There's
a
great symphony, and there's a lot of great music.
There's theater, there's a literary scene, you know. So I think that when you have a thriving art scene, that ends up, there's usually a good rock and roll scene, too.
Any cool stories? Last question. Last legitimate question. I'm going to have to do something really stupid. Any cool stories from the tour so far? Anything like someone in the audience, you know, screamed out Free Bird or, you know, something, you know, or free Nerd. There you go. Screamed out Free Nerd, which would be even better. Any good?
Well, we played kind of an interesting gig last week, actually, with NERD, where we played in that, you know, the Egyptian room in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, where they have those, where, right. You know, a lot of movies have been filmed in that room.
Yeah.
So that was just, and it was just sort of a...
Surreal kind
of... It was a benefit, so it wasn't that big of a deal of a gig, but it was just kind of surreal to play a gig in that room.
Yeah.
Kind of a famous room.
Also, I guess, I don't know, this is maybe exciting, maybe not, but we did a... earlier on in the tour that we did with NERD and Black Eyed Peas, we, in the middle of that tour, just in the first week or two, we went to New York, where there was this huge rush of TV promotion for NERD, where we did, I think it was like 8 shows in like two or three days, and it was totally insane. But we were doing, shows like Regis and David Letterman, Ellen DeGeneres, and
Regis. Can you imagine? And here's Nerd.
Yeah.
It was like that.
So that we got.
Funny.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And at the same time, too, like
experiencing that really early in the morning.
Yeah.
Really early.
You need a lot of aspirin, I would imagine.
Yeah.
We're all kind of bummed out. I hope. Regis doesn't take this personally, but we were kind of bummed out that Kelly wasn't there. His wife was filling in that day.
Joyce Philbin.
It was interesting watching Regis's wife compare these diamond rings. You know, you'll see Pharrell's diamond ring all the time. You know, he wears it on his right hand. He's singing. It's huge. You know, it's like 26 carats. She's like, oh, well, I have one at home like that. So. Yeah, so there it is. Okay.